You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, this is Robin Johnson, and welcome back to another edition of the Best of Heartland Politics. This is a radio show I began in 2014 that's now a regular podcast and show on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. In these hyper-polarized times where everything is politicized and divisive, it's nice to hear of a long-term friendship that overcame strong differences of opinions and captures what true friendship is really all about. Author Scott Eyman wrote a book called Hank and Jim, The 50-Year Friendship of Henry Fonda and James Stewart. They had very different upbringings and faced a crisis in their friendship over the Vietnam War. Stewart's son was killed in battle while Fonda's daughter opposed the war and even went to North Vietnam to show her support. There are lessons to be learned here for all of us on the importance of friendships and how to overcome the most serious differences to maintain that relationship. How nice it would be if more of us could emulate Jimmy Stewart and Hank Fonda. Here's another Best of Heartland Politics with author Scott Eyman and a story of true friendship.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Heartland Politics. This is Robin Johnson, and this is our last show of 2017. We're going to take a bit of a break from shows on purely politics, and I don't think our listeners are going to mind that too much. And today we're going to talk about the movies, significantly about two Hollywood icons who are the subject of a new book. It's called Hank and Jim, The 50-Year Friendship of Henry Fonda and James Stewart. And our guest today is the author of the book, Scott Eyman, who was a guest about a year ago, I think it was. We're talking about his biography of John Wayne. Scott, thanks so much for being on again, and welcome back.
No, thanks for having me, Robin.
This is fun for me because I love the movies, and I really love how the impact of movies and movie stars on our politics and culture, and I think this has some interesting applications, but we're just going to kind of have a little fun and follow through and just talk about these two folks and some similarities and differences. I really recommend the book if you're still looking for a gift. I heartily recommend it. But last year, I remember we talked about John Wayne, and I asked you what your next book was, and you said this one. What kind of got you motivated to write a book on these two legends?
Well, on the one hand, it was not a book I'd already written. And after you've written 14 or 15 books, that's attractive. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's also a book I'd never read, which has made it even more attractive. Because most books about intimate friendships between famous people are about politicians, you know, or statesmen, if you prefer. Churchill and Roosevelt or John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, you know, that kind of thing. But there really hadn't been any books about two huge iconic movie stars who formed a bond early in their life and never let it lapse. Partially because it's an unusual relationship, especially in the modern context of show business, because most actors nowadays and most people in show business are basically migrant workers. You go where the work is. You know, you can be in Vancouver, you can be in England, you can be in Iceland, you can be in New Zealand, you could be in Florida, you could be all over the world. So there's all these independently moving planets, you know, that seldom intersect. But in the period that we're talking about, the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, basically, if you worked in Hollywood, I mean, if you worked in the movie business, you worked in Hollywood. So it was actually possible to see people on a regular basis, you know, and form a relationship, which is what happened with Stewart and Fonda, although they happened to form their relationship as young actors in New York, but they sustained it and strengthened it when they went to Hollywood.
You know, the thing that I found interesting right off the bat that plays a little bit to the name of our show, Heartland Politics, both of these actors were brought up in the Heartland. How talk about that a little bit and how it may have influenced their careers and the values they brought to their work.
Well, yeah, Stewart was born in a little town called Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Fonda was born in a place called Grand Island, Nebraska. His family moved to Omaha when he was three or four. So their attitudes towards the Midwest and Midwestern values was slightly different, as so many things about them were different. Stewart was very happy to incarnate Midwestern values. His kids told me that although they were born in Beverly Hills and grew up in Beverly Hills, it really wasn't a Beverly Hills house. The only movie people at Stewart's house were Henry Fonda, Lou Wasserman, who ran MCA Universal, and occasionally Gary Cooper, but not often. That was it. There weren't a lot of movie people at the Stewart house because he didn't really trust most movie people, and he wasn't comfortable with that many movie people. He could act comfortable because he was a consummate actor, and he never put people off. But he didn't particularly, having spending 8 hours a day with them was more than enough. He didn't want to spend his private life with them as well. Fonda had a more, I guess, antagonistic attitude might be the word, because his father took him to a lynching in Omaha when he was 14 years old. He was a black guy. They pulled him out of the jail. They hung him. They cut him down. They shot him full of holes. They attached the body to a car and ran it around the Omaha town center. And his father wanted him to witness this as an example of what people are capable of at their very worst. And as you might imagine, you know, it had a lot more impact than taking the kid to a baseball game. So Fonda had this very well-honed suspicion of a blanket patriotism, because he thought it was often a cover for something much more covert and much more threatening. So that was actually the beginning of Henry Fonda's political life, was witnessing a lynching when he was 14 years old.
Yeah, you mentioned that there are similarities and differences, one of their major differences was in politics. It was interesting when you mentioned that in the book. I'm trying to guess which one may have been more left, which one may have been right, and I guessed right. So I'll let you talk about that and how, again, that played. Now we talk about that, and that might have been something that would have busted up a friendship in these uncertain times.
Oh, certainly, it has busted up friendships these days. And I imagine it busted up some friendships in the 1940s as well. Fonda was liberal, not quite as liberal as his daughter, but liberal. And Stewart was conservative, quite conservative. And it was never really an issue for them as young actors, because when they were in New York, they were trying to just get enough to eat, because it was the pit of the Depression. They moved in together in 1932, along with Josh Logan and a couple other people, in a kind of frat house atmosphere. The hotel was on a rooming house where Lincoln Center is now, in the West 60s. And so, you know, everything was tabled to the factor of survival. They went out to Hollywood in 35. Fonda went first. Stewart followed about 6 months later. And they roomed together again until Fonda got married for the first time. And you know, then they got their lives going, and they were focused on their careers, and Fonda got married, and his kids came along, and so there was that. And their political differences didn't really burst into the open until the House Un-American Activities Committee got into the swim of things after World War II. And of course, during the war, they were also both busy. Stewart was a bomber pilot. He flew B-24s on bombing missions over Germany and Belgium and occupied France. And Fonda was a naval intelligence officer in the South Pacific. After the war, the communist hunt for communists began, and they had their only serious argument in their entire 50-year friendship over the investigation to find communists. And it got very heated. And at some point, they backed off, realizing that their relationship, the friendship, meant more to them than their adherence to their individual politics. So they agreed to disagree, and they never spoke about politics again. It was simply tabled. You know, they put it in the room, and they closed the door. And they both knew what was behind the door, but neither one of them would open the door. In the 60s, Jane Fonda got very involved in her political activities, and Stewart was her godfather. Stewart was godfather to both Peter and Jane. To this day, they refer to him as Uncle Jimmy. Mm-hmm. You know, and Jane Fonda is 80 years old yesterday, and Peter, I think, is 77. And they both, it's always, it's Uncle Jimmy this and it's Uncle Jimmy that. He was, the relationship was familial. It wasn't just an honorarium. I mean, he was really part of their lives growing up. And they both think the world of them. But after the war, things got heated. And then during Vietnam, of course, things got even more heated. And reporters would always ask Stewart what he thought about Jane. And what was she was doing, and this march and that march and this appearance and that appearance, and he would always refuse to answer. I'm sure he was appalled because his politics never altered much. But he knew that if he slagged his goddaughter, it would hurt Fonda, and it would hurt his goddaughter, and he wouldn't do that because he was a very gentle soul, basically. And he didn't want to hurt her feelings, and he certainly didn't want to hurt his oldest friend's feelings. So even when he wasn't talking to Fonda, he wouldn't get into the discussion of his godchild's left-wing politics. I'm sure Fonda appreciated that greatly.
Yeah. I mean, I was just struck, what a wonderful lesson for this time of the year, the holiday season, but also for friendships now of people that, as we've discussed earlier, just friendships broken by politics, which seems a lot worse than it used to be to me anyway. And here's a lesson to two people that, you know, really, as Stewart did, buried a fundamental difference with his good friend's daughter over a very serious issue in the 1960s.
A lesson. And Stewart lost a child in Vietnam. His son was killed in Vietnam. So he had, as they say, a skin on the table. I mean, it was a grievous loss for him and his wife. But even then, he would not. He would talk in general about Vietnam protesters and loss of respect for the flag and those kinds of things. But he would simply refuse to discuss Jane in any context, whatever, in that sense.
This was a remarkable friendship, again, over 50 years, which I wasn't aware of this, and I don't know how aware most people are out there, people that enjoy their movies and from that era, but. What was interesting to me was it stood the test of time even when they didn't see each other for several years because I didn't know this either. Their careers kind of took different directions where Stewart was really focused on Hollywood and movies and Fonda really loved the stage in New York.
Uh-huh. No, Fonda reinvented himself. He left Hollywood in 1947 and went to New York to become a stage actor. He'd always loved the stage passionately when he was a young man, and he never was crazy about the movie business because, this is my interpretation, he never said this, but he was a control freak, a total perfectionist and a total control freak. And if you're making a movie as an actor, you really don't have that much control because you've got all these people in front of you, between you and the audience, that can alter what you think you're doing. There's the director, of course. There's the studio. There's the composer. There's the editor. It's just very hard to control the shaping of a performance in a movie. Whereas on stage, when the curtain goes up, you're on your own. It's just you and the audience, and there's really nobody else except the other actors. And he loved that. He loved that one-on-one communion between the actor and the audience because he was in control to a great extent. And there were only a lot of Fonda's movies he never even saw. He liked some movies that he did. He liked the Ford films, the John Ford pictures, of course, My Darling Clementine, Grapes of Wrath, of course, Young Mr. Lincoln. He liked 12 Angry Men a lot. He liked the Hitchcock picture. He did The Wrong Man, which I love as well. But it was a short list. You could count it on two hands, the Henry Fonda films that Henry Fonda liked. He liked The Oxbow Incident a lot. That was personal because it's a movie about a lynch mob, and it was his way of closing the circle that his father had begun when he was 14. But he didn't like a lot of movies, and he didn't really trust the movie industry. Whereas Stewart loved making movies, and he thought movies were the ultimate art form, and he only went back to the stage to visit an old friend called Harvey. That you know, he'd done it on Broadway as a kind of tryout for the movie version after the war, and then he made the movie version, of course. And in the 70s, when his movie career was kind of spiraling downhill because of his age, you know, the audience was mostly on television. His audience was mostly on television by that point, and he was ambivalent about television. He did a real revival of Harvey on Broadway, and it was also did in London, and also taped it for in American television. But other than that, he stayed off the stage. He had very little interest in going on stage, whereas Fonda was devoted to the stage. And when he left Hollywood in 1947, he didn't come back until 1955. He did Mr. Roberts for 3 years, 2 years on Broadway and a year on tour. He did the Caine Mutiny Court Martial. He did Two for the Seesaw. He had some big plays in New York. And he had some plays that weren't so big. But that was okay because that's the nature of the theater, you know.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on KBUR AM 1490 and FM 99.3. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today we're talking about a new book that just came out, fresh for the holidays. If you need a gift idea, heartily recommended by me. It's called Hank and Jim, The 50-Year Friendship of Henry Fonda and James Stewart. Nice picture of both of them enjoying a cold beverage on the front. And the author, Scott Eiman, is with us today. He wrote the New York Times bestseller John Wayne and was a guest of mine about a year ago. And so we're just digging into the book a little bit and talking about this heyday of motion pictures and this unique friendship. You talk about how, like most friendships, and I imagine our listeners out there can relate to this with their true friendships, these gentlemen were separated at times, but then when they sat down, they started taking up the conversation like they'd never been apart.
No, they had that real emotional intimacy. And I mean, we all have one or two friends like that, where you can be separated for months or even years. And of course, it's easy with email now. And you just pick things up, you know, right where you left off. There's none of that rough grinding of gears that you sometimes get. They had that true emotional intimacy that doesn't happen that often between people. They knew it was remarkable. Each of them understood that this was in some way a very special, one-of-a-kind friendship. And it couldn't be replicated just because it'd be nice to have more people like that in your life. Because there are never a lot of people like that in your life, anybody's life. So they each cherished cherished that space where they were together as friends.
What was the breakthrough movie for each that really catapulted them on their career in the movies?
Well, the breakthrough, I mean, it never happens. It seems to happen all at once, but it doesn't. It almost never does. For Fonda, I think Fonda was more fully formed as an actor younger than Stewart was, because Fonda hooked up with John Ford in 1938 to do Young Mr. Lincoln, and they did three films in quick succession. They did Young Mr. Lincoln, Drums Along the Mohawk, and then they did The Grapes of Wrath. Well, it's three for three, you know?
Yeah.
And Young Mr. Lincoln is a classic, and The Grapes of Wrath is certainly a classic. And Tom Joad pretty much set the matrix for Fonda's screen character, and his character off screen as well, and his character in the theater as well. He's kind of spiky. He's kind of a wary loner who holds himself apart from what everybody else is thinking and doing and observes and comes to his conclusions. But he's basically in search of the right thing. He's trying to do the right thing, and he's trying to tell the truth, even if everybody around him is babbling nonsensically. And then he went off to war, and he did those three pictures and one or two others, and then he did Oxbow Incident for Wellman, and then he went off to war. Stewart, before the war, is essentially a male ingenue. His biggest picture before the war would have been Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where he brought his idealism and his passion to the fore. Most of the time, he plays very soft. My favorite Stewart film of the pre-war era is The Shop Around the Corner, Ernst Lubitsch's film, with Margaret Sullivan, who was Fonda's first wife and I think the great love of his life, and the one that got away, as far as Fonda was concerned, and also a woman who Stewart was besotted with as well. They were both in love with her at different times. And I can't imagine the subject ever came up because that would be awkward.
Yeah.
But it's just an exquisite, almost perfect movie. It's one of those pictures you look at and you think, well, they couldn't have really done it any better than they did, given that story and that script. It's the performances are pitch perfect. The direction is subtle and beautiful, and it's just a very moving, sweet film. And then Stuart goes off to war, and he spends 4 years away, which is a long time when you're off screen, because the movies are always concerned with what's happening, what's new, you know, what's trending now. And he was gone a long time. Fonda was gone close to 3 years. Stuart was gone 4 years. Each of them came back very uncertain of themselves. Stuart's first film back is It's a Wonderful Life for Frank Capra. Fonda was the second choice. If Stuart had turned it down, Capra was going to ask Fonda. And it wasn't going to be hard to find him because Stuart was living at Fonda's house after the war. Because Stuart's house had been rented out while he was in Europe bombing as a bomber pilot. And he came back, and the lease still had a few months to run on his old house. So he moved into the playhouse on Fonda's house that Henry had built for Peter and Jane. And Peter and Jane moved into the guest room, and Fonda moved into their playhouse. So they just picked up right where they left off after the war. And for Peter and Jane, it was, well, Uncle Jimmy's back too. This is great, you know, because he was great with kids. Stuart was great with kids. And he'd play with them, and they just adored him. So that was that. And they just picked up right where they left off after the war.
I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, everybody is watching It's a Wonderful Life. I've seen it many times. I'm going to be watching it over the weekend.
Sure.
Can you picture Henry Fonda in place of Jim Stewart there? What do you think? I mean, I'm trying to do that. I'm having difficulty.
I think he could have played it, but I don't think it would have been as effective as Stewart is.
Yeah.
Because the Stewart after the war is a different actor than he was before the war. The war gave him reserves of anxiety and fear that he could never have dispersed in his regular life had he been a hardware store owner in Indiana, Pennsylvania. You know, mm-hmm. Well, good luck. What do you do with that? That's why so many guys don't like to talk about it when they come. There's two kinds of ex-soldiers, the ones that love to talk about it and won't shut up, and the ones that won't speak about it at all, mm-hmm. You know. And Stewart was the latter. He simply wouldn't discuss it. You couldn't get it out of him. His son told me a hilarious story. This is about 1959, 1960. He had an assignment from school to write a paper about World War II. And he came home and he thought, oh, well, this is going to be great. I'll get the old man to talk about the war. Because they knew he'd been a bomber pilot, but that's all they knew, the kids. So they're sitting at the dinner table, and he tells his father that he's got to write this paper on World War II. There's a pause and a pause. And Stuart nods, and finally he says, well, there's a couple rows of books in the library. You're welcome to use any of them.
Well, those of us.
And that was it.
Those of us that had fathers that served in the war understand that. I mean, my dad only began talking about it after he started going to military reunions in the 90s. That's a very common occurrence with a lot of us from that generation.
Sure.
Sons of that generation.
But that level of fear and anxiety that he experienced, because there's no way around it. You have to you live with it. It's there. You can't pretend it's not there. But you have to function at a very high level anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And that awareness that, and I think I say somewhere in the book, the thing about being a part of an aircraft crew in the war is that you could do everything right and you could still get killed.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with how well everybody did their jobs. A lot of it was just luck, you know? It was just, there's no way around that,
mm-hmm.
As it is in a war. Do you intersect with that bullet or that piece of flak or that whatever it is, that depth charge if you're in a submarine? So it's out of your hands. So you have to learn to live not with just with the fear of death, but with the absolute knowledge that you can't avoid it even if you see it coming.
Yeah.
You just have to give that up, you know? But that gave that reservoir of fear and anxiety that he was filled with, he could access that at will in his work. He did that in, of course, It's a Wonderful Life, the latter portions of the film. He does that in the Anthony Mann Westerns that he did. He does that in Vertigo for Hitchcock. He can go very, very deep, and he could go very, very dark. And I don't think that he could have been as expert at delineating that existential desperation had he not had those experiences he had in World War II as a pilot.
We'll wrap up here with I have to ask you to share with our listeners What are your favorite films? Say three of each actor. If you want to go more than that, that's fine. But some of these I was aware of that were listed in the book that you talked highly of. Some I wasn't, and I'm going to be spending some time catching up. But what are your favorite, say, three or four for each actor?
Oh, well, for Fonda, I love Grapes of Wrath. I love My Darling Clementine. Probably my favorite John Ford Western, which is heresy, I know, because it's not a John Wayne Western. But I think it's a gorgeously shot picture, and I think Fonda is just wonderful in it. A tie between The Wrong Man and 12 Angry Men. Very different pictures, completely different movies. In The Wrong Man, Fonda is completely passive and a victim. In 12 Angry Men, of course, he's juror number 8 who won't settle for any easy answers about whether or not this Puerto Rican killed this guy.
Mm-hmm.
For Stewart, I would go with Shop Around the Corner. And Vertigo and Anatomy of a Murder. I love the ambiguity that he brings to Anatomy of Murder, the attorney in Anatomy of Murder. He's not sure if his client is guilty or not. You know, there's a distinct chance he is guilty, and there's a distinct chance that the woman he's married to is a slut. But that's not really his job. He's a defense attorney. He's going to try to get this guy off, even if it was murder, you know. And to see an actor who could play passionate conviction suddenly be able to switch gears and play dispassion, but in a kind of intellectually searching way at the same time, for his own purposes, not necessarily for the purposes of the trial, but for his own purposes as an attorney, is very interesting. Stewart had many, many shades of gray. He had more shades of gray, I think, than Fonda did, actually, as an actor.
Scott Eyman has been our guest today on Heartland Politics. We've had a really fun discussion of his new book out called Hank and Jim, The 50-Year Friendship of Henry Fonda and James Stewart. We talked a little politics, a little Midwest heartland culture here, but mostly just a fun discussion about the movies, and I really appreciate, Scott, you taking the time to be on. Folks, again, you can find this book online or in your bookstore, and Scott also wrote the book about John Wayne. He's written 15 books, and the one that I am circling and I'm probably going to get next is Print the Legend, The Life and Times of John Ford, because he's been a major factor in both this book and then the book about John Wayne. I know I saw Scott on TCM here not too long ago, it seems, talking about the movies, so you'll see him around or read about him, so I encourage you to grab this book just for a fun read, and you'll learn a lot, too. I know I did. It was really interesting learning about these acting legends, the military service, their different personalities, and also and their upbringing. So, Scott, thank you again for your work and for taking the time to be our guest today.
Thank you so very much.